You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Monday to you. What a weekend for Razorback sports. Arkansas football beats Mississippi State 58-25 in a game that doesn't count, but obviously matters a lot. Arkansas basketball beating Kansas on Friday night in an exhibition game over at Bud Walton Arena. We'll get to all of that today. Ethan Westerman with me here. The Razorback football team now one win away from bowl eligibility. We think they'll probably hit that in November. They got four chances to do it beginning Saturday when Ole Miss comes to town. By the way, the kickoff has been announced for that game 11 a.m. on ESPN on Saturday when the Rebels come to Fayetteville. Ethan, I thought it was maybe the most impressive showing by Arkansas this year. I have a little bit of hesitation because I don't think Mississippi State is very good. I was on the fence about them last week, but I thought maybe the fact that they had played Georgia and Texas A&M to within 10 showed a level of improvement. Jeff Lebby even talked about this in the postgame. He said, you know, I thought we had made real progress, and then obviously they took a step back against Arkansas. Defensively, Mississippi State was maybe a level ahead, and I say a level, like maybe a slight step up from UAPB in the opener, because it felt like that UAPB game in the fact that they were getting very little resistance from the other side. The only way I give Mississippi State a better grade than UAPB is the fact that they did force a punt. They did force Arkansas to kick some field goals instead of scoring touchdowns. But, I mean, it felt a lot like watching that UAPB game and the fact that whatever Arkansas wanted to do offensively, Arkansas could do offensively, because Mississippi State had no answer for them defensively. It's as bad of an SEC defense as I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, Arkansas had its most yards per play against an SEC opponent all time, so I think that tells you everything you need to know. They have more yards per play than they did against UAPB. That Mississippi State defense, I mean, we knew going into the game like that it was not at all a strength of their team. Defense wasn't, but like what Arkansas did was still very impressive. That's I think that people need to realize. I think there's been a lot of, after the game, people kind of discrediting it a little bit, saying like, oh, we'll play against a better defense. Like, people are trying to
downplay. You got to play who's on your schedule.
You got to play who's on your schedule. And the fact of the matter is Arkansas had the best offensive showing any team's had against Mississippi State. They've played Texas. They've played Georgia. They've played Texas A&M. This was the best that any offense has played against Mississippi State this year. And I think that's
saying something.
Yeah.
Everybody's had, you know, the day of their year playing Mississippi State.
Yeah. And so I think that's what's encouraging I think people are very used to seeing Arkansas just not take care of business the way that they would like to see them take care of business. They did exactly we didn't even expect them to do what they did on Saturday. It was like the best case scenario, I feel like, from an offensive standpoint, just how well they executed. I mean, we were all going into that game saying it wouldn't surprise us if Arkansas got beat. And then, you know, I left that game saying, well, to take one out of Hugh Freeze's playbook, if they played nine more times, Arkansas would win every single one of them, I think.
I think you're probably right. Yeah. I thought the big play of the game was Landon Jackson strip sacking their quarterback on the second play of the game, because it took all of the air out of that stadium, because all of a sudden it's, you know, first down, Mississippi State runs, second down, sack, fumble, third play, Braylon Russell, fourth play, Braylon Russell, fifth play, Taylen Green touchdown, and it's like, okay, we got no chance today.
Yeah, that was big. The defense in general just getting some takeovers. It would be nice maybe if they spread out their turnovers forced throughout some games, because they're just – get a lot. They had five at Auburn, five against Mississippi State. I think they have 12 on the year. It's encouraging for them to see them create those takeaways, but man, they go through some dry spells where they don't have any. So but that was big for them on Saturday. They needed them.
I think I wanted to go back to a point that you made, because it's something that I've been thinking about too. If you take away the Oklahoma State game and the way that they blew that game at the end, I feel like Arkansas in every game this year has pretty much, you know, the scores, they may not be what you expect them to be, but I feel like they've pretty much taken care of business when you've expected them to take care of business, and they've lost most of the times when you thought that they might lose. They beat Tennessee. They upset Tennessee. But like A&M, I've heard people say, well, you know, Arkansas should have won that game. Well, maybe, but they didn't play a great game that day. against Texas A&M. And I think what we're finding out is Texas A&M's a really good football team. Auburn, you thought they'd go to Auburn and beat Auburn. They did that. LSU, I thought LSU was a better team than Arkansas, and that proved on the field. Certainly Arkansas could have played a better game and made it more competitive, but I think the better team won that night. But the point being is, like, to your point, there's been a level of unpredictability about Arkansas for the last few years, and I feel like maybe it's like the games are playing out more so like what it looks on paper they will play out. It's actually playing out that way on Saturday more often than it has in the past.
Yeah, and it just goes to show how Arkansas capitalized, I think, on a weird year in the SEC, because you go before the season, if we laid out and said, oh, they took care of it, they're at 5-3 entering the Ole Miss game, and they took care of business in every game that they should have, you would have been like, I mean, you would have said, what happened to Auburn? What, you know, what happened here? What happened there? Because Arkansas, what it's done, I feel like, is really capitalized on, there are some teams just having down years. Like Mississippi State, you need to capitalize on going on the road on a year that they're very beatable. If Arkansas loses that game, that's just a black eye, I think, on Sam Pittman's tenure here. It would have been, but they took care of business. They capitalized on, like I said, Auburn having a down year. They capitalized on having a top five team coming into their stadium. They're taking advantage of good situations. You know, they could very well right now have only one or two losses, but the way it sits right now, they're 5-3 entering the Ole Miss game. I think most people would have taken that before the season without batting an eye.
And just to put into context how rare this is just the third time that Arkansas has gone to an SEC stadium and won by 30 or more points. It happened in their first game as a conference member against South Carolina in 1992. They won that game 45-7 against a bad South Carolina team. And then in 07, an Ole Miss team that I don't believe won a game in Ed Ogeron's final year, at least a SEC game, Arkansas beat them there 44-8 in Oxford. Those are the only two times that Arkansas has won like this on the road. Those were kind of those were very bad teams that they beat, and I think Mississippi State kind of fits that bill too. I have a hard time seeing Mississippi State winning another conference game, and I figure they'll beat UMass this weekend, but I wouldn't be surprised if UMass went in there and gave them some problems, because that defense is so bad.
Yeah. That, I mean, that you left Saturday's game saying, who can they stop? I mean, Arkansas, it was like they were playing against air at times is what it felt like to me.
I would be interested to see Mississippi State's defense against Oklahoma's offense.
Yeah, that would be that's nasty stuff to think about. But
the stoppable force versus the movable object.
There you go.
Oh,
that's
my
it.
Goodness. Yeah. But That defense, really, you got to remember too, this is year one for Jeff Lebby, and it's got to be hard for him, but he did sound like that parent that's told their kid 1,000 times to stop doing something, and they stop for a while, and then they all of a sudden one day, he just sounded like that disappointed parent, like, I thought we were going somewhere with this, I thought we had made some serious mm-hmm. improvements, and then they go out and let Arkansas drop 58 on them, and let's be honest, it could have probably been uglier, like, you don't have the interception that Taylen Green throws in Arkansas. It just felt like Arkansas was going to score almost every time they touched the ball.
There were some things that I think Arkansas is going to, look at this and say, hey, you got to clean that up. Defensively, Arkansas did not play well. And this could have been a much closer game than it turned out being. I said I thought Arkansas was going to have to win a shootout with Mississippi State. And you think about it, if their receiver, you know, doesn't make a stupid move and throw the ball in the stands from the 1 yard line, if they don't fumble on the goal line, if you know they're able to maybe make a field goal or convert another time in the red zone, all of a sudden this is like a 50-40 type, you know, shootout. Yeah. Down there, and it's got a totally different feel. Defensively, I thought it was, I don't know if I would say it was the worst game that Arkansas has played this year, but what we're seeing with Arkansas, it feels like right now, is that they had that high water mark against Tennessee, and then the last two games against LSU and Mississippi State have been pretty bad regressions for them defensively. And I think that that should be a real concern with Ole Miss coming in this week.
Yeah, I'd agree, because here's the thing. LSU and Mississippi State both have good offenses. Like, the offense really has not been the problem for Mississippi State much this year. Like, look at their recent other games, and they've been moving the ball, scoring some points. LSU, we knew that they had a good offense. It's now Arkansas is getting in this portion of its schedule where they're playing good offenses, and Ole Miss, I mean, they certainly fit the bill. You look at their season stats. So it's going to be a real challenge for them this week. They got to show some improvement, especially just the thing that was concerning from Mississippi State game, in my opinion, was they had really bad angles taken a lot of the time. They weren't tackling well.
Lots of broken tackles.
It was just like super sloppy defensive play. Mm-hmm. That's what was, I think, a little alarming, was not even that. It's not like Mississippi State was always earning it completely. I think a lot of it was given away.
And credit to Arkansas's defense for, you know, bending but not breaking. They did commit, or they did force 5 turnovers in the game. They had some goal line stands. They made plays. They had a fourth down stand early in the game. They made some plays. It's just when the competition gets better, it's going to be, I feel like it's going to be a lot tougher.
Yeah.
Taylen Green, great game for Arkansas, completed 23 of 29 passes, 314 yards, 5 touchdowns, also ran for a touchdown, had 79 yards on the ground. He was not sacked. It was a great game for Arkansas's offensive line. This is what Sam Pittman had to say on his coach's show yesterday about Taylen Green and the performance that he had in Starkville.
He was so poised. I've said it before. If we get better around him, our O-line, man, did they play good today. This kid's really, really good if we get better around him. Braylon Russell rushing for 175. When he doesn't have to do it all, just most of it or some of it, he really good.
That's Sam Pittman from his coach's show from Hogs Plus. One of the things that stood out to me about Taylen was the fact that I think he had 9 different receivers who caught a pass, and that's really different than a lot of games that we've seen Arkansas where, you know, I mean, we've all talked about it, how he seems like he locks in on Andrew Armstrong. Well, on Saturday, it was Luke Haz. It was Andres Poshka. It was Isaac Tesla. I mean, everybody was getting it. Jordan Anthony had a touchdown for the first time. Everybody, it felt like, was getting in on the act.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not like they were just being targeted once. 7 of them had multiple receptions. So, yeah, we have talked about the tunnel vision he can sometimes have with Armstrong, which, I mean, I think most quarterbacks do have their go-to. Like, it's good to have your go-to guy, but, I mean, there's been those examples, like in the Tennessee game where there was a wide-open Isaac Tesla, and he was so locked in on Armstrong that he just missed what would have been a touchdown. It's those type of moments that have been, I think, concerning for people who are watching. But, yeah, Saturday he spread it around for sure. The throw to Jordan Anthony was really, really impressive, I thought. It was just it showed, I think, improvement with just his accuracy in general. Like, that was a really tough throw to make. And he wasn't always having to make throws. I feel like this year a lot of times his best throws have been on those busted plays where he's scrambling around, and it's like, mm-hmm, somehow that makes him more accurate when he's like already moving. It felt like on Saturday he was able to just hang in there and make the accurate throws without having to, you know, be flushed out of the pocket. He was standing in there and just delivering it, which that was you know, I think that that's in itself big improvement.
Arkansas didn't have Jaquindon Jackson for the game, but still had the best rushing performance of the season, not only by Arkansas, but by any SEC team. 359 yards on the ground. Russell gets the headlines because he had 175 yards, obviously had the big 75-yard run in the fourth quarter, but Rashad DeBinion had a big game, 98 yards, easily the best game that he's had this season. Taylen Green, like we said, had 79 rushing yards. It was a really, really impressive performance for Arkansas from a running standpoint, and so much of that I feel like has to do with the offensive line. This is what Pittman had to say about the offensive line play in the game.
Out to Coach Mateus, Bobby called a freaking great game, you know, and down there on 4th and 1 and hit Luke, but the offensive line played by far, not even close, their best football game.
Arkansas had Patrick Kutis back for the game, and you wrote about this, is that not only did he play, he was the highest-rated, or was it second-highest-rated lineman Arkansas had?
He was, his overall offensive grade was highest for Arkansas. His pass blocking was the second best. Okay. So, that was big for them. I think that seeing him be comfortable out there, that's just a testament to whatever program, I guess, they've put him in while he's been gone, because that I get it. It's not the best defensive line in the world that they went against, but he hadn't played against outside competition since last year. And so whatever they did with him to have him be ready, it worked.
I don't think he's redshirting.
We'll see.
I mean, they got four more games to go. Why would you take him out? You paid attention to this more than I did. What was Blackstock's snap count? Because they said they were going to split some time between the two of them at guard.
Yeah, it was off the top of my head, I think around 20. I think there were overall like 60-something offensive plays. I think Kudus had 40, and then Blackstock had a bit more. I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe I'm being too much conspiracy right here. But, I mean, Louisiana Tech, could you roll out the offensive line you've had for most of your season and keep that red shirt?
I don't think you'd do that. Huh? I think offensive line plays so much about rhythm that I think you want to keep those guys together.
Well, I also think
going into a Missouri game that could be very, very winnable. It feels like the way Missouri's played.
I just think they also want to keep Kudus another year if they can, but who knows?
Yeah, I think to me, I understand looking out for the well-being and the future of the player. To me, it's about winning now and doing what it takes to win now.
Yeah, and I just think that they could win Louisiana Tech without him.
They might be able to.
And he might not even be playing a whole half for that game anyway.
He's got to stay healthy until that point too. Yeah, I mean, anybody who's had a back injury, they can attest that you never know. You never know when that thing's going to flare up on you.
Kudus 46 snaps, Blackstock 16. So I was a little bit off, but kind of in the ballpark.
So Arkansas beats Mississippi State 58-25. Again, Ole Miss this weekend. Ole Miss opens, I think, as a 4-point favorite is what I saw the other day. And we haven't had rain here in about 3 months. It's supposed to rain this weekend. I mean, we may have an old-fashioned rain game on Saturday because it looks like it's going to be an all-day event. Yeah,
it might be an all-week. I checked last night, and we are supposed to, starting, I think, on Tuesday, there's a chance every single day leading up to Saturday.
Rain can be a great equalizer. We've seen it before, including in games against Ole Miss.
And let me tell you, I love fall in Northwest Arkansas, and I feel like the lack of rain is taking a real hit on our fall here. They're all just, all these leaves are just crunchy and dying.
Hey, you need to go on a ride. I took my kids on Sunday down 71 to Mount Gaylor, Artist Point area. And it's beautiful.
It's pretty, but they're all crunchy and dying. They're going to be gone by.
When I'm standing 1,000 feet above the canyon down below, I don't care if they're crunchy. Well, they look good.
I need the rain to come and create juicier leaves.
and juicier.
So we have a prolonged fall here.
Let's cut Ethan off. All right. We got a lot more to get to today. We're going to give our takes on the weekend SEC football. Lots of interesting results, obviously, over the weekend. Also, we'll talk more about Arkansas and Kansas basketball Friday night. What a win for Razorback basketball in the first game, even if it didn't count, of the John Calipari era. Much more coming, but first a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. We've had a costume change here. We've got Anthony Christensen on the desk now. Anthony is our Razorback basketball reporter for WholeHogSports.com. He was there Friday night when the Razorbacks beat Kansas 85-69 in an exhibition game at Bud Walton Arena. What's your takeaway from this game? Because Kansas didn't have all their players. And it wasn't just the fact that they were shorthanded. Hunter Dickinson may be one of the best 5 players in basketball. Mm-hmm. Ryland Griffin was a starter on a Final Four team for Alabama. Shaq Moore, I think he's going to play for him quite a bit this year. Arkansas was missing Jonas Adu, and that's a difference maker for them too. They win the game, but I wonder, like, it just feels to me like if they were to play a real game when they were at full health in the regular season, maybe Arkansas wins, but it just would have been a totally different feel than what you saw Friday night. But that said, Arkansas, with the players who were on the floor, they looked really good.
Yeah, I think my biggest takeaway from the game is that I'm still kind of recovering from leaving Bud Walton at 12:30 in the morning. But overall, no, like you said, it was a fun game to be at. A lot of good highlights to take from it. But I mean, the biggest thing that you obviously mentioned it there was that Kansas was down, you know, three at least key rotational guys, if not starters. I mean, Hunter Dickinson, you know, love him or hate him, I know he's obviously one of the big polarizing figures in men's college basketball, but you know, he provides, you know, such a good presence in the post for Kansas, and did at Michigan as well. And I kind of noticed, especially, you know, even though Arkansas didn't really have a true center presence with Jonas Adu out for that game, you know, Arkansas found a lot of success in the paint, just kind of driving to the basket, because, you know, maybe Flory Badunga isn't ready to take on, you know, SEC caliber offenses just yet. And that's not to say, you know, he won't be or anything. He's a five-star was a five-star for a reason. But for your first game at the college level to be against, you know, some guys who are, or a lot of guys who are probably going to be playing in the professional level, you know, that can be tough. But I would say the biggest takeaway would be that just, you know, Arkansas did look really good, even with, you know, Kansas obviously missing some guys, and whether or not it would be a different outcome had, you know, somebody like Hunter Dickinson played, or Shaq Moore or Rylan Griffin, you know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But I mean, there's plenty of encouraging signs to take if you're Arkansas. You don't want to look too much into an exhibition, because it is just that, an exhibition. But you know, there is a lot of positives to take from it, I think.
This is what John Calipari had to say after the game.
There, I got a good group of young people. I do. Nelly hadn't practiced, and he looked good. Nelly's going to play because he fights. He's a battler. He's going to play. Our guards are pretty good, both of them. I mean, they're good players. And you want to talk about what they did offensively. I want to talk about what they did defensively. And again, they got two guys out. So don't, you know, this isn't, I'm looking at this different than maybe everybody else. I'm happy we played the way. Did we look organized? Did we look like we really tried to play hard and defend? We've only been together a short time, so I'm happy, because I wanted people to leave and say that was fun to watch.
John Calipari, it looked to me during times, you know, he puts on this face during the game of frustration a lot of times. And I think a lot of it is real.
Mm-hmm.
I also think he was really proud of how they played the other night. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, it would zoom over to him sometimes and get a fist pump. You get some clapping. It looked like they were doing a lot of the things that he had been preaching to them. And, you know, obviously it was showing on the court.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you mentioned, he was really proud of the way they played some defense. I mean, I believe Boogie Flan finished with five or six steals, as much or one more than he had assists. DJ Wagner had some really nice moments defensively. I think Zvonimir Ivicic, you know, swatted a lob pass into the fourth row of the student section. So there was a lot to like from that side of the ball. Offensively, I mean, when Boogie Flan was the primary ball handler and DJ Wagner was kind of playing more of an off-ball role, I thought those guys played really, really well together. Just the way they were able to just kind of play off each other. I think obviously they'd played together before for the USA basketball teams, so maybe that chemistry comes from there. But you know, there was a lot to like from those guys. And I think, you know, obviously those two have kind of taken a lot of the headlines. I really liked what I saw from Zvonimir Ivicic just on both sides of the ball. His passing ability was really good. He had some really nice passes. And then obviously John L. Davis didn't have, you know, his best offensive night. But he was getting some good looks. Obviously he's been out of practice for a little bit.
Battling a wrist injury.
Yes, yeah. He'd been out of practice for a bit, and you know, he was getting some good looks. He did fight on defense, like John Calipari had said. I remember him getting a steal and then getting a look at the other end as well. I don't remember who it was with, but he had a really nice, I think it was a handoff, and then he kind of went off, did a little ghost screen, and got an open look in the corner that he, unfortunately for him, he had missed. But those are the kind of looks that you want John L. Davis to be getting. But yeah, there's a lot to like in that regard. And then obviously, speaking on the defensive side of things, I mean, when you get Jonas Adu it back, you know, who's an elite rim protector, that can only help you in the end.
There were players who were missing, but one of the matchups that I was most interested in going into this game, and it's a matchup you got to see, was Boogie Flan and DeJuan Harris. I mean, DeJuan Harris, 2 years ago, was the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. This guy can really play defense, and Flan was beating him off the bounce, it felt like, time and time again. I mean, if Flan's playing like that in the preseason against that caliber of a defender, boy, the sky looks like it could be the limit for him.
Absolutely, and like Calipari had said, it was on both sides of the ball. I mean, Boogie Flan really defended him well. I know maybe the numbers wouldn't exactly say that because DeJuan Harris ended up finishing with, I think, 26 points. But, you know, he had a decent amount of turnovers, especially when you're talking about DeJuan Harris. And a lot of that came down to Boogie Flan playing defense on him. And then, obviously, the offense, like we mentioned earlier, just the way that Boogie Flan and DJ Wagner kind of played off of each other, I thought was really, really impressive. And, yeah, I mean, going up against, you know, a guy who, you know, like you said, DeJuan Harris, who is a great defensive player and often locks up, I mean, the opposing team's best player, it was impressive. And I asked DeJuan Harris about, you know, DJ Wagner and Boogie Flan postgame. Almost said DJ Flan. you know, I asked about, you know, those guys postgame, and he said, I mean, they're projected to be pros for a reason. You know, obviously that's, you know, it's high praise coming from a guy like that who is, you know, had the individual accolades he's had. He's won a national title and been a big part of, you know, a lot of teams that have had success in March. So, I mean, that's, you know, big praise coming from him.
John Calipari, he's kind of hard to get a sound bite out of because his mind, it feels like it kind of goes all over the place as he's talking. I can relate. I feel like I kind of do that too. So he's going to repeat some of the stuff in this soundbite that maybe you heard in the earlier soundbite, but this has got a little bit more critical analysis of some of the things that he saw that maybe he didn't like on Friday night.
Look, they had two of their better players out, so let's not do like triple backflips. I mean, but what I liked was we really guarded the ball pretty good for a team that's not been together long. For a team that has practiced with five guys for probably 2 weeks, we played against GAs. To be able to go out and do, we only had three turnovers at half. We had 10 in the second half. How the hell do you have 10 in the second half? And a bunch of them came in a stretch where, like, for no reason. Why would you do that? We even had our quarterback throw the interception and run down the field and say stuff to the wide receiver so everybody knew it was his fault, not mine. We had one of those today. Like, what? It's your fault. You threw the ball. Don't blame him. So there were things. Rebounding. I know we don't have Jonas, so maybe that cures some of the stuff. But I had to tell a couple guys, if you don't rebound and come up with balls, I can't play you. This league is a man's league. And if you're getting shoved around and or they're outworking you for balls, then I got to play somebody else.
So there's John Calipari. After the rebounding thing, every time that he went to they had Seth Greenberg on the sideline with a microphone, and they would go to Calipari during some of the timeouts and sometimes even during the game. And, by the way, we think we're going to have Seth Greenberg on the podcast tomorrow. Every time they would go to him, it was like, rebound. Like what are we doing? Rebounding. And certainly something that he wasn't pleased with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and like he said, you know, maybe getting Jonas Adu back, you know, whenever he is available, be that, you know, this coming weekend or not. I do think that'll alleviate some of that just because, like we mentioned, I mean, he's such a, you know, good presence in the post and in the paint. You know, he's going to get a lot of those balls. And maybe you want to see more out of, you know, guys like Trevin Brazil or Du Thiro, in that regard, in the rebounding game. So you can understand some of the frustration there, and the turnovers. I believe there was an over and back, and then a backcourt violation as well, if I remember correctly. I mean, those are going to be the frustrating ones, right? Just kind of, I guess, just kind of mental lapses, if you will. But I mean, if you're looking for, you know, things like that to complain about in a game that like they played on Friday, I mean, it seems to me like you played a pretty good game. Obviously, you know, you want to win the rebound battle, because more often than not, when you do that, you're going to win games, unless you're really good at a lot of other things, which sometimes teams have success, you know, kind of sacrificing rebounds for, you know, some other aspects. I remember the Missouri team of a couple years ago was really bad on the boards, but, you know, won and ended up winning, I think it was like 25, 26 games. So sometimes you can, you know, sacrifice that for other aspects of the game, but, you know, I don't think this is an Arkansas team that's going to have that. I think they're going to need to do, you know, better on the boards. So you can understand some of the frustrations there. But overall, I think, you know, as he mentioned, you know, he's really well, really pleased with how that game kind of transpired.
Bill Self, the Hall of Fame Kansas coach, he was pretty complimentary of Arkansas and had to say this.
It wasn't our team, first of all. But I didn't learn anything very favorable. I learned that their three guards kicked our three guards' butt. I learned that their big guys kicked our big guys' butt. But, you know, I'm thinking that it'll be a different team when some other guys get out there. But Arkansas is really talented. I mean, they got great pieces and their guards. I mean, that'll be the best trio of guards we play against this year. There won't be anybody better than that that we play against. So and then they got, you know, shot blocking and rim protection behind it. They got a good team.
I don't think there could have been a better press conference for a couple of guys who just tell you exactly what's on their mind.
Exactly. No. And you like he mentioned, I mean, he also mentioned at some point during that press conference that, you know, even though John L. Davis, you know, is still coming back, you know, he knows that he's going to be a factor for this Arkansas team. Even though, you know, Jonas Adu is out, you know, he's still very complimentary of the Arkansas big guys. You know, I assume he's talking about, you know, Zvonimir Ivicic and Trevin Brazil, and maybe Adu Thiro in there as well. But yeah, I mean, I can't talk. but you get a guy like that kind of being complimentary. He also mentioned it during that press conference that, you know, he thinks this Arkansas team might be more talented than some of his Kentucky teams, or Calipari's Kentucky teams, I should say. You know, which Kentucky teams he's talking about, not sure. Probably not the Devin Booker team or the Anthony Davis team or anything like that. But, you know, there is a lot of talent on that team, and, you know, how it kind of comes together, especially, you know, against TCU on Friday, or, you know, against Lipscomb and Baylor coming up, I think will tell a lot about the team. But obviously the early signs are promising.
Didn't Self say something about they got to get together? Like they got to come to Arkansas again and play this game? like a game that counts?
Yeah, either that or get them to Bud Walton, or not Bud Walton.
Get them to Fog.
Get them to Allen Fieldhouse, yeah, which, you know, as a college basketball connoisseur, I wouldn't complain about going up to Fog Allen Fieldhouse again, because very good game day atmosphere if you've never been. It's a fantastic place to watch a game.
I think the people at Kansas, they were very impressed with the atmosphere that Arkansas had for, again, an exhibition game on Friday night. hard to believe that it had been so long since Kansas had been in Fayetteville, 1986 at Barnhill Arena, the last time that KU had come to town.
Remember it like it was yesterday.
I bet you do. you can stay on top of all the Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. Get the most complete Razorback coverage in one location. Subscription will give you 20 issues per year to our Hogs Illustrated magazine, plus complete access to our website, wholehogsports.com. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. A month, hogsillustrated.com/subscribe, or call 479-684-5509, 479-684-5509 for our Hogs Illustrated magazine. When we come back, Ethan Westerman will be back. We will go over the weekend in SEC football, but first, another word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kindle King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kindle King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. Ethan back on the desk with me now. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They have been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. One more thought on Kansas. You were there Friday night. What were your thoughts?
Just in general, I was impressed with the guard play. That's what stood out to me. Boogie Fland is one of the most talented, I think, freshman guards I've ever seen, just with the ball in his hand creating. He's so shifty. He's attack first mentality, I thought, but he can shoot too. I was just so impressed with the guard play. First of all, I like DJ Wagner's game too. Those are the main thing that stood out is just how good I think Arkansas's guards have a chance to be. I also thought I was a little surprised it wasn't packed. It just wasn't. I think there was probably, I would estimate, like 17,500 or something around there. It was cool what they did. They had like these LED wristbands that were synced up to, I don't know who was on the control panel, but they would just have it do all this crazy stuff, and it made for a cool environment. I mean, Calipari even mentioned how cool the wristbands were, so that stood out to him.
I wonder how many people bought tickets, and like who were the people who bought tickets and didn't show up, because they announced this as a sellout quite some time ago.
Who knows? I mean, 8 p.m. on a weeknight, or I guess it was
on Friday night.
No excuse. I was going to come up with an excuse for people, but
I do think high school football is an excuse, because I think there's a lot of people who like going out to high school games. Now, I don't know if they are the people who are buying. You know, like, I know we were across the street over at Harmon Field on Friday night, and we're all looking at we're looking at the game, we're looking at our watches, we're looking at the score. It's like, hey, can we get out of here before the basketball game ends? Because that was what it wasn't just that. You had a volleyball game going on at Barnhill that night. You had a softball scrimmage going on over at Bogle that had some people in the stands. I mean, it was a lot of people packed into a very little area on Friday night. But I do wonder, who were the people who bought tickets who didn't show up? Because it wasn't just like it was some empty seats from talking to you and talking to others who were there. It was quite a few.
Yeah, and it's hard to see from the kind of the level that we're sitting at as reporters, the upper bowl, like exactly how many people are up there, because it's a little bit darker. But I've heard from people that the upper bowl, there were really just some areas that there just weren't many people. But
interesting.
Yeah. Other than that, like, I think that my biggest takeaway was just how much fun I think this style of basketball will be for Arkansas fans to watch. It's fun basketball offensively, in my opinion. I just think that they move the ball really well. The spacing seemed good. Good guard play. So, enjoy watching Boogie Fland this year, because it's going to be the 1 year you have with him, I think.
he was fun to watch. What I saw, I ended up watching probably about three quarters of it.
Yeah.
On Friday night once I got home, and boy, he looks like he's the real deal.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to be a lot of fun to watch here this year for Arkansas. Looking at SEC football over the weekend, of course, the big result, Texas A&M beating LSU 38-23 on Saturday night down at Kyle Field in the matchup of the only unbeaten teams in SEC play left. A&M, it feels to me like people are not sold on A&M, and I don't quite understand why. They were 14th in the AP poll last week. They did get a bump out of this LSU win to 10th. But, I mean, based on what I have seen from them, I would have them even higher than that in the AP poll. They look like a really good team. And when Marcel Reed came off the bench, I've been trying to think about, like, how to explain this. Number one, LSU had no chance stopping him. It happened after halftime, and it happened so late in the game that there was just no time for LSU really to adjust to it. It was like the combination of Reed and that crowd at Kyle Field. I heard Billy Lucci, who's a longtime reporter down there for Texags, he said that it's the loudest he's ever heard Kyle Field. I mean, think about that for a minute, a place that is known for noise, and it's the loudest you've ever heard them. It just seemed like all of it just kind of combined to just overwhelm LSU after halftime. It was like watching it's like watching them melt. I was thinking about Reed coming off the bench, though. It's kind of like in a baseball game where you face a guy who throws a certain way for a little while. You know, like maybe you throw a maybe you face a junk ball guy for a few innings, and then they bring a guy who throws 98, 99 in at the back, and that first time through the lineup, you have a lot of trouble, you know, adjusting for the speed, or maybe vice versa. You go from a guy who throws real fast to a guy who throws junk ball. The point being that LSU just had no time to respond, it felt like, to what A&M was doing, because it happened so late in the game when they brought Reed in.
Yeah, it made me wonder what happens. I mean, I don't think they win, but it makes me wonder if, because Sam Pittman said like they weren't going to run Taylen Green against LSU because he still was a little bit, you know, injured from the game against Tennessee. It makes me wonder if he had been at full speed, how if that could have really opened things up more for the Arkansas offense, because you saw how much trouble LSU had against Reed and the once they had to face a dual threat quarterback. That was honestly A&M making that move, Mike Elko doing that, took a lot of guts, I think, just in the middle of the game. And
just knowing your team.
Yeah, knowing your team. And I mean, you saw they showed Wegman on the sideline getting the news from Elko, like, hey, you're going to be out. And I didn't like his body language personally. I thought it was pretty, like, I don't know. It just, like, it's not working what y'all are doing right now out there. And just the body language, I get it. It's probably hard news to hear that you're being replaced in the middle of a game, but it just, I don't know. I didn't like it that much. But it took some guts for them to switch out and have Reed come in there, and it paid off. I mean, LSU just didn't know how to defend a dual-threat quarterback like that. Yeah, A&M was rocking, and I know you hate them, the uniforms. I loved them. I thought they were cool.
Oh, they're terrible.
They were awesome.
They were awful.
They were awesome.
No.
Yes.
A&M. By the way, just shy of 109,000 people there. You know, the only event bigger than that at Kyle Field this year was George Strait during the summer. He got 111,000 in.
Yeah, well, I wonder if George Strait, if that's just a good omen bringing him in before the football season.
Might be because they got a nice little 3-week stretch here that looks very winnable. They go to South Carolina this weekend. South Carolina coming off a bye. It's a night game. You never know how that's going to go. You know, how does A&M harness its emotion going into this game? Then they play the Aggies from New Mexico State. Then they go to Auburn. Figure they'll win that game. And then they get Bevo coming into College Station at the end of November. Boy, can you imagine what that might be like if A&M is undefeated in conference play? And you know what's weird about that game? Depending on what Texas does, they could very easily play that game and turn around and play the next week in Atlanta in the SEC championship game.
Yeah, and then what if they met again in the college football playoff?
Yeah, I mean, maybe that one's in Austin. Who knows? Yeah. It's A&M has got a nice got a nice road. It feels like to get to Atlanta, and I don't even know that they've got to go undefeated to do it. I think if they have one loss, they could probably still pretty easily get there because they've got that head to head over LSU. And I don't know that there's going to be a whole lot of other one-loss teams in the SEC.
Yeah, I agree. I was looking at their schedule. I think I said this before they played whoever it was they played a few weeks ago that I thought was also maybe a loss. I said if they can get past LSU, it feels like this is the type of schedule where you're going to make the playoff. I think A&M, what I like about them is their defensive concepts are just so troubling for other quarterbacks. That you can beat an LSU like I still think Garrett Nussmeier is one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC, but you can beat those type of teams at A&M because they're so good at just disguising stuff, especially those like third and tens, and making the quarterbacks just have trouble. So I said last week on the show, I said I think it's a team like A&M that'll beat an LSU. You got to have like just an elite defense and an elite defensive play caller.
Yeah, they've got that in Mike Elko. He has been really, really good for the Aggies. I think that they're probably fortunate that they didn't get Mark Stoops last year when it seemed like that's who they wanted. The Longhorns beat Vanderbilt 27-24. Looks like Quinn Ewers is going to be Texas quarterback moving forward. He played a pretty good game over in Vanderbilt or in Nashville. Texas tried to let Vanderbilt get into it late in the game but was able to hold on and win that game. Texas, the shine's come off of them a little bit the last couple of weeks. They don't look unbeatable. And, you know, you think about Arkansas' schedule looking down the road, November 16th, Texas comes in here, Arkansas coming off a bye. I know they didn't play good off a bye against LSU, but that might be something worth watching.
Yeah. And
it doesn't feel as unwinnable
Texas
as maybe it did earlier in the
year. Feels like they're having a delayed Tennessee experience where we thought Tennessee looked like they could just dominate anybody, and then they start meeting a little bit tougher competition, and you're like, they're beatable. I think that's kind of how I feel about Texas right now. They're still very good, but, I mean, they're not like how I viewed them a couple weeks ago.
I was excited. My ratings prediction had Ole Miss beating Oklahoma 25-13. The final score was 26-14.
Yeah.
That nearly pegged it.
Yeah. Those ratings, I continually come back and be like,
they're all over the board. I mean, we've got bad misses. They also had Arkansas beating Mississippi State by 6. So,
yeah.
You know, let's put away the anointing oil. But,
yeah. But they do occasionally do one of these things where you're just proud of them.
Sometimes they give you, I think more often than not, you know, they had Texas was an 18.5 point favorite. They had Texas beating Vanderbilt by 6. They beat them by 3. More often than not, they can give you an idea of what the game is going to be like. Because I felt like there were a lot of betting lines this weekend that were really wacky. Texas 18.5. You know, I said the other day I thought Ole Miss could cover 21 against Oklahoma. But then, you know, you kind of sit back and you think about it. 21's an awfully big line, even for a team that can't score like Oklahoma. Ole Miss had 9 sacks in that game. Oklahoma has given up 9 sacks in both of their last two games, not combined. 9 sacks in both of their last two games. The Sooners are just a train wreck, as Jack Jones might say. Alabama beat Missouri 34-0. How is Missouri still ranked number 25 in the AP poll? Are people not watching this team because they are not a top 25 team?
Yeah, I'm frustrated about that because in general, I don't really love the AP poll that much this year. It just seems like there's so many nuances that I'm like, what football are y'all watching? Missouri is in no way. How does Vanderbilt drop out for almost beating Texas, and then you somehow keep Mizzou in?
I would even, and I know head to head has to play a factor, but based on how they look right now, I would put Vanderbilt over Missouri. Even though Vanderbilt lost to them in Columbia, I would rank Vanderbilt over Missouri right now. Now I wouldn't rank Missouri.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
Yeah, I definitely.
They looked really bad. Cook got knocked out in that game, and they didn't look like they had an offense without him.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I feel like Missouri it's like as if the college football playoff handed them a ticket before the year to the playoff and said, just don't drop
Missouri's
this.
Losing.
It was literally like golden platter. Here, you're going to be able to go. Just take care of business. Don't drop this ticket. And they dropped it.
Missouri is 6-2 right now. I will be surprised if Missouri doesn't have at least 4 losses by the end of the year. They still play OU. I think that's a winnable game for OU, even with no offense. They play at South Carolina. They play at Mississippi State. Maybe that's a game that Mississippi State picks them off. Don't know. And, of course, Arkansas goes there. If you were asking me to pick right now, I'd pick Arkansas to beat Missouri in Columbia.
Yeah.
Arkansas's got a good team on the road this year. I mean, I know what happened at the end of Oklahoma State, but otherwise they beat Auburn. They beat Mississippi State. They outplayed Oklahoma State for the majority of that game. This has been as good as I've seen Arkansas on the road this year.
Yeah, they have a chance to, you know, in true road SEC games, wipe the slate if they can just take care of business in Como. I say take care of business. They're probably going to be, I would assume Missouri will be favored just because perception and how Arkansas has played over there. But it feels to me like a game that Arkansas should win.
Auburn beat Kentucky 24-10 on Saturday night. Jarquez Hunter ran for 278 yards and 2 touchdowns. An incredible game for him. Auburn, they didn't play a real clean game, but they played well enough to beat Kentucky. Kentucky, they're in bad shape right now. One other thing here, or a couple of other things before we get out here real quick. We've got SEC fantasy football, I think is what I've started to refer to this as. There is no fantasy football in the SEC, but if there were, these were the leaders over the weekend. Talen Green, 45.5 points as a quarterback. Marcel Reed, 2nd with 27. Diego Pavia, 3rd with 24.4. Jarquez Hunter got 43.7 points as a running back for Auburn. Because
he's
of
good. Game. Yeah, he's really good. He's the what did they say? The Lamborghini on, I forget.
He's the shining light in the darkness for Auburn football.
Yeah.
Rashad DeBinion for Arkansas, 19.5 points. Braylon Russell, 18.6. Jamarian Miller of Alabama had 16.8. Top receiver of the weekend, DeAndre Moore of Texas. He had a couple of touchdowns and 97 yards, give him 24.7 points. Matthew Shipley of Arkansas, the top kicker with 16, and Alabama's defense, the top defense with 17 points. They had three interceptions, a sack, and, of course, posted a shutout against Missouri. First shutout for an SEC football team in the last two seasons in an SEC versus SEC game. And then we just got word real quick on SEC Players of the Week. I saw Taylen Green got offensive honors. Who else was Arkansas got on there?
We were talking about this before the show, and we pegged it. It was co-offensive of the week for Jarquez Hunter and Taylen Green.
Figured
and
that would be the case.
Co-freshman with Braylon Russell and Marcel Reed. I just figured it was hard to leave any of the Arkansas guys off, but you also couldn't leave those other two off. So
did Shipley?
No.
No?
No, that was Arkansas's two honors. Shipley... It's funny because he just took care of business, but it's like all of his field goal attempts were within 35 yards or something.
It was 32, 27, and 29.
And he kept on having to kick extra points, too, because Mississippi State couldn't stop the Razorbacks. So,
all right. We appreciate you being with us today. Hope you'll join us at WholeHogSports.com. Of course, Sam Pittman will be speaking after we record this podcast, but you'll be able to read all of his comments on the Mississippi State game and getting ready for Ole Miss. Later today on our website. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. Chip Sousa will be here with me as we talk more about Razorback football, maybe some more Razorback basketball. Who knows what's in store. Appreciate you being with us. Have a great day, everyone.